information about this you can find at PortlandChinatownMuseum.org or at KBOO at Stage and Studio. Coming up next is Art Focus. Art Focus interviews artist Ralph Pugai about his new show, A Spiritual Guide to Brute Force, now showing at Up 4 Gallery. KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO listener members and support from Portland Saturday Market, 45 years of handmade arts and crafts, fresh food, and local music. Open every Saturday and Sunday through Christmas Eve at Waterfront Park in downtown Portland. Open daily from December 19th through the 24th of the Festival of the Last Minute. Event schedule, vendor information, and more online at PortlandSaturdayMarket.com. And now, Art Focus.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is painter Ralph Pugai. His show, A Spiritual Guide to Brute Force, is on now at Up 4 Gallery until December the 22nd. Thanks very much for coming into KBOO.
Thanks for having me, Joseph.
This is a very colorful show. There's a lot of acrylic paintings and screen prints around the room. There's 17 color works and then 150 ink drawings on the big wall on the left as you go into Up 4. I was surprised that your screen prints were, well, you describe them as CMYK, and they came from a digital drawing. So a couple of ones that if you're in the gallery to look out for, there's one called Early Training Day and another one called Plastic Witch. Now, Early Training Day is a bunch of kind of cartoon burglars in a maze, in a low sort of privet maze. Just tell us what they're doing, because it's kind of confusing.
Yeah, no, I think, so I would say, first off, a lot of the images that you would see in the exhibition started off from having done a bunch of residencies starting from this summer. I was fortunate enough to do residencies at different locations in North America, starting with Chicago at the School of Art, the Art Institute in Chicago, in June, where I was part of the painting intensive summer residency program that they have over there. And then I went to Montreal to do a printmaking residency at Atelier Circulaire, where I learned about screen printing. And over there, what I was really interested with was the CMYK process, which is a very, it's a very straightforward process of separating colors into cyan, magenta, yellow, and black, right? With these, because I was traveling and because you don't necessarily have a studio in the residency, it's sort of like a cooperative atelier. I decided that it would be best for me to create images outside of the residency, and so I would sit in my room, my lodging area, and I would draw on the iPad. Three images came out of that residency, one of which is like Easy Training Day. A lot of them, all of the screen prints, I went through the process of learning how to do CMYK. But in this image, Easy Training Day, I guess when I think about my work, a lot of them start out as approximations of isometric projection. A lot of my images start out with environments, and I've always wanted to draw a hedge maze. And because I was in Montreal, I think these sort of, what do you call them? They're cat burglars.
Mm-hmm. A guy with black trousers and a white stripy shirt and a little stocking cap and eye, kind of raccoon thing around his eyes.
Yeah, no, I'm like really interested in caricatures and like archetypes, and in this case, I'm always wondering what archetypes imbue. And I guess with like the current political moment, I was thinking about cat burglars a lot, in that despite the fact that they might be devious. They're somewhat disciplined. They sort of like learn the craft of cat burglary, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And so I guess I'm like, I was really interested in thinking about an environment to superimpose these characters in, and a hedge maze just seemed perfect in the it's a training area where you might be sort of like looking for a resolution in some way, trying to get from like one end to the other, right? But it doesn't require a lot of skill.
So they're training, is that the idea?
Sort of. Okay. But I was also really interested in images of devious people that were sort of like somewhat self-aware and just very relaxed in the environment that they were in. And so when I think about my work, they're sort of like representations of things that I might be thinking about or feeling in my everyday experience. But ultimately, what ends up happening is that the archetypes become representations of those feelings or those memories. And then they sort of like are superimposed in these environments that kind of like connote something that's really complex and sometimes contradictory.
Mm-hmm. One of the other screen prints is called Plastic Witch, and it's a witch with a purple hat over her eyes, and she seems to be kind of grinning or doing something, and in front of her are, you know, a dozen lava lamps, and each one is very brightly colored. You have this sort of whole spectrum there, and the bodies of the lamps contrast with the color of the oil, but there is this bright white light coming from all of them. Just tell me how you did this on an iPad.
Doing it on the iPad was the easy part of it, I would say, and it's easy to really kind of like pick colors off of like an app like Adobe Sketch, for example.
Is that what you use?
Sketch? Yeah, yeah.
What kind of stylus?
I use an iPencil.
Is that's the thing that comes with the high-end iPad?
Yeah.
What kind of iPad was it?
What's an nice? iPad Pro.
So that's the big one, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So this was easy.
Yeah, but the hard part about it was translating it into a screen print, because screen print at this scale, so like each of these screen prints are 22 by 30 inches, and at that scale you're dealing with very large screens. And for a beginner, it's kind of hard to pull consistent screens, especially edition screens. Mm-hmm. These screens require two people to pull. Mm-hmm. So as opposed to training in the traditional route that Atelier Circulaire would train their residents in, what I ended up doing was just asking my instructor to sort of help me pull these CMYK prints. Screen printing is very athletic, in that you're constantly moving screens around, which are using metallic structures or supports. And so you're taking that to wash it, to put developer on it, to put it in a bed so that you can pull colors out of it. Screen printing ultimately is just about preparing. Like, there's so much that goes into like pulling an image out. Mm-hmm. And so for these out, like as a painter, I was really interested in translating the challenge of creating a primarily black image.
I should say the background to this is black.
Yeah, it's very dark. But you know, and usually it's really difficult to sort of like pull off creating a black image in paint, right? Because it's like with painting, usually the way that they train you is to start out with your light colors first and then your dark colors, because it's hard to paint over black colors. And I was really interested in that methodology and how it might translate into a screen printing type of methodology. I would say that with screen printing, the thing that I was really interested in with CMYK is it's sort of like a precursor to the pixelated digital images that we have now, right? But somehow with screen printing in CMYK, what you end up getting is the pixels sort of get removed through the use of like a very matte ink that they use in screen printing. And so it's like what you get is like this really velvety type of image that is somewhat pixelated, but the pixels seem somewhat more organic. And I think that's what I was most attracted to.
In the final output, you're saying the viewer will see this in the ink on the wall.
Yeah. So it's like the digital becomes somewhat... Pixel? Yeah, it becomes a little bit more organic. And I created variations of these images too, where it's like I was just pulling the images myself, which were a little bit more painterly. But ultimately, my instructor told me that those weren't very good prints, but I still really love them because they're very gestural in nature.
So how many colors paint did you use in this?
Four, just cyan, magenta, yellow, and black.
So how did you get the orange?
The orange is a mixture of the magenta and the yellow, I suppose.
But it's how many passes?
Two passes for each color.
Okay, right. So is that a lot for a screen print? Four colors, two passes each?
No, not necessarily. I mean, it's like I've seen prints that don't use the CMYK process where they just go about it color by color, and there's several different color inks that somebody might use depending on what it is that they're doing.
Does the iPad translate any of this for you and tell you which colors to use?
No. I ended up using Photoshop to sort of separate the colors.
What do you mean? How did that work?
So there's a process that you can use in Photoshop. I'm forgetting the name for it now, but where you put an image into the program and then those colors get separated into CMYK, and then you end up with these grayscale dotted images, halftoned images that separates those colors one by one. And it was actually really fascinating to sort of like see an image develop, starting with the lighter colors, right? So it's like the process is not quite CMYK. It's yellow, magenta, cyan, and black. So you start out with yellow, and so you see the image from with a yellow ink, and then you pass another color through, which is the magenta, and then you see magenta and yellow combined to create an image, and then slowly you develop it to have the other colors, and then it's sort of like this build-up process where you start like sort of like seeing the image kind of like take a life of its own. Is a really interesting process. I feel like I definitely kind of have this I have this renewed appreciation for the discipline now, for sure.
The discipline of screen printing.
Screen printing.
Right. And there's several acrylic paintings in this show.
Yeah.
One of them is called Nun Funeral.
Uh-huh.
Just tell us a bit about that. It's basically a nun lying in an open casket.
Yeah.
Seems to be alive.
Uh-huh.
Is she? Her eyes are open?
Yeah, no,
hard
I'm...
to say.
I think... so usually, since I've been painting, I've been making these characters, right? And a lot of them kind of like talk about anxiety or catastrophe. But in this case, I think with a lot of the images that I've created this time around, a lot of the characters seem very self-assured and relaxed in some way, or maybe... what do you call it? Self-aware. A lot of the images are sort of like looking at the viewer as if they're very aware of them being watched.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the way that I came about this image was just being really interested actually in trying to create a casket or render a casket without necessarily using a device to sort of render the angularity of that casket.
Yeah. So the image is a open casket on a table with a nun in it. And then to the left and right, there are nuns who appear to be in the plane of the table and of the nun. But they can't really be. Well, one of them can't because their head is like mostly off the table. And then behind them, there are the hands and body of another nun who's clearly standing vertically. Then you have the coffin itself is sort of, you know, it's got a strange perspective. You can see both handles on both sides. And then the left side, the wood is, it looks warped or it's kind of, you know, deliberately you've drawn it in a way that it's sort of showing the coffin to be a bit more open than it really would be if it was a traditional coffin. So it's kind of a cartoony look. Why pick that in this serious subject?
I'm really interested in sort of conventions, spatial conventions like linear perspective and isometric projection.
What is isometric?
Isometric projection is the sort of method of trying to depict something. So, it's basically like the method that they use for creating blueprints for architectural environments or even like video game environments, in that the space doesn't necessarily recede, but you get to see it in a 3D model. You see everything. So as opposed to an image that sort of like recedes into the horizon, what you get is a parallelogram. And I guess I'm like really interested in those as sort of like traditional conventions for depicting space. Mm-hmm. But I'm really interested in sort of like taking or using those maybe intuitively, because it's like I feel like those traditions are basically like outside of traditions that maybe I come from, right? It's like I didn't necessarily train in AutoCAD or in video game design, but I'm interested in the way that those things convey space, environments, or experiences. Even with linear perspective, like, I mean, I trained in that, but I feel like I'm really interested in complicating those types of spaces because they're somewhat robotic and kind of describes the world in very linear terms that feels very inorganic. So it's like when I think about those things, I think about them as a way to sort of like create a language for how we understand space, right? The way that I think about space is much more complicated than that. Like, I feel like along with thinking about space as concrete, like there's also time, and that it's like even if you're standing still, you're moving a little bit, and so that informs the way that you see space. There's this thinker that also kind of like talks about this idea of seeing as not necessarily just about like seeing with your eyes, but also your.
Who is that?
I forget his name, but it's like I just saw like a YouTube video of somebody talking about this idea of like seeing is not necessarily just about the eyes, but it's about the way that he describes it is almost as if it's being blind with two walking sticks, and that it's like seeing requires different senses, not just your eyes, but also your sense of smell, your sense of hearing, tactility is involved in terms of like the way that you memorize space. So I think a lot about that in relation to the way that I look at these images now.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You are listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Ralph Pugai. He's a painter whose show, A Spiritual Guide to Brute Force, is on now at Up 4 Gallery in the Pearl through December 22nd, 2018. Ralph, there is another painting, another acrylic called No Longer Withholding. Mm-hmm. And it's very surreal. Somebody is basically about 50 little chubby fairies are coming out of the body of somebody on a operating table, because you can see the surgeon who's opened the person up, but that's about all I can see. And these cherubs are multicultural, I guess, or multi-ethnic, multiracial, and the surgeon's white, and the body seems to be white. So who here is withholding and who isn't?
That's a really interesting question. I guess I don't really think about it in those terms. I think really, well, I'm thinking more about that chest. So it's like, it's the chest that's withholding, right? But it's like, that's really interesting that we would think about it in terms of like the characters. But ultimately what I was thinking about with this image is like the eruption that comes out of like a particular part of your body and how that can be a character that acts on its own as well. And I'm like really interested in like thinking of my work in the realm of symbolism and that it activates different types of symbols and sort of like extracts what you might from them, given that they're sort of like juxtaposed or kind of like mashed up with different symbols that might be related or not necessarily related with one another. So in terms of this image, the way that I think about it is that we understand the like a surgery type of environment, right? And what might happen in there. But then there's the chest and like what comes out of the chest. There's like a heart that is in the chest. When I think about the heart, it's associated with it could be associated with these cherubs, right?
Mm-hmm. Which are these cupids? Are these love hearts?
Somewhat, yeah. I mean, it's like I'm also really interested in people being able to translate the images based on their own interpretation of them. So they could be like cherubs or they could be cupids. Regardless of that, the fact is like when we think about those entities, they're figures, right? And figures, the way that we understand figures is that they could be like we think about figures in terms of color. Like we at the current moment, race is a very important thing that we're thinking about. And so it seemed really interesting to sort of like collide all of these different symbols together and see what comes up. And usually when I think about these images, like images that I create, I'm not necessarily like trying to get to a point. I'm much more interested in like complicating the way that we create points. And I think when I think about my work too, I feel like a lot of people associate them with memes, and there's like a lot of them have animals, a lot of them have catastrophes that are happening. But despite that, like I'm interested in images that I can look at for a long period of time.
One way that they're, you know, they hold you is they have a lot going on, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I compare them to Richard Scarry's children's books where there's like a toy town or whatever, it's, you know, something car town. And look at this big double page and there's like 150 little cars and people and things going on. You can stare at it for ages. So you have that way of like massing lots of activity going on in a very cartoon-like way. Say a bit more about memes, because when I think of a meme, I think of a still image with a funny picture and then some words over the top. What do you mean in a sense?
Yeah, I guess with memes, I mean, I can only speak from my own experience. I don't necessarily think about memes.
Like, where do you see memes?
I guess in the way that the images could potentially evoke that they might have a punchline, and this like there's a lot of tension with these symbols, right, when they collide with one another. But when I feel like I succeed best in creating images when I feel like the image doesn't necessarily resolve itself, the story could potentially continue in the mind of the viewer or in my mind, that the story doesn't necessarily like resolve itself through a punchline, but rather through like an image that doesn't necessarily resolve itself by way of the figures resolving themselves. So in this case, the idea of like caricatures that might seem self-aware or self-satisfied with what is going on, I feel sort of like extends their life in someone's imagination.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that classic surrealism, to create an image that kind of confuses people and makes them fill in the rest themselves.
Yeah, I guess that there's like moments when it's like the images are somewhat surreal, but I guess I'm not necessarily thinking about them in terms of dreams. Like I think about these images as sort of like puzzles. Like they're not automatic. A lot of them sort of like require a lot of contemplation in terms of like how something might feel confident in the environment that they're in.
Mm-hmm. So you have one, it's called Overextended. It's it looks like a cat with her paws surrounding a little bowl with a plant in it. And then her claws are going, they're really, really long, and they're so long they're going off the edge of the table.
Yeah.
In a kind of Dali-like way, kind of like dripping off the table.
Yeah.
What is the lack of resolution in this image?
I suppose it's like when I look at that cat, like he or she or they are going through this moment of misguided certainty, right? It's like this cat and its affect seems very satisfied with mm-hmm. what's going on, despite the fact that it has claws that look somewhat rubbery. and I guess when I think about it, yeah, like there, it is a moment of surrealism, but I'm not. I feel like when I think about surrealism, it's almost as if like it's about like catching the punchline of a dream or something. But I'm not necessarily, I guess, interested in that. Like, I guess I'm interested in these characters going through surreal moments, but despite that, it's like they're not interested in their own disorientation. They're interested in their experience.
Mm-hmm. Aside from the color work, the acrylics, there are 130 ink on paper drawings on the walls. These are very fast, kind of, you know, kind of Kenny Scharff type things as I see them, individual characters. How did they come about?
So those ink drawings started out in Captiva, Florida at the Rauschenberg residency. And they sort of started out incidentally because I didn't have my supplies with me. And what ended up happening was I saw some free supplies that previous residents have left behind. And one of them was like a pad of newsprint, and another one was like a bottle of ink, and it was sort of a really good way to just kind of like get warmed up, I thought. And so I would, at the Rauschenberg residency, what I ended up doing was thinking about creating screen prints with drawings, which eventually I ended up just discarding that. I mean, I was still screen printing, but what ended up happening was I was really obsessed with creating these drawings after swimming. Like, it became a ritual where I would go swimming and then I would draw before dinner or before lunch. And what I thought was really interesting was that while I was in the pool, a lot of the movements that you do in the pool when you don't know how to swim are very awkward. It's very related to somatic experiencing or ecstatic dance in some way, right? And that you're just moving around in ways that your body wouldn't normally do if you were like out in the world or out in public. And I think that there was something about that that I felt some resonance with in terms of the fact that a lot of the ink drawings would start out with angles, and the angles would then turn into postures for characters, or they would start out as limbs, and then those would evoke something, and then they would take on these personalities. The thing that I like about newsprint is that they're thin, like they're sort of like elementary type of it's an elementary type of material that you use in like beginning drawing class, right? And also the way that it interacts with the ink is really interesting, in that when you create strokes with like heavy amounts of ink, well, the ink sort of pulls the paper into the contours. I felt like seeing the ink dry in the newsprint, the way that the newsprint crease, it felt like a really good metaphor for how our interiors and the exteriors of these caricatures get pulled into their contours. As if like the way that we see ourselves or the way that we embody ourselves affects the environments that we're in.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week was Ralph Pugai. His show, A Spiritual Guide to Brute Force, is on now at Up4 Gallery through December 22nd. Thanks for coming into KBOO, Ralph.
Thanks, Joseph.
KBOO Community Radio is hiring a development director. This 32-hour-a-week position develops and implements the yearly fundraising plan, develops promotional and press materials, and supports the anti-oppression work of KBOO. Send a cover letter and resume to Delphine Crescenzo at del@kboo.org or send to KBOO Development Hire, 20 Southeast 8th, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Please answer in the cover letter the question, why is KBOO important? More information on the development director position is available at kboo.fm/developmenthire2018.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Alternativity on Saturday and Sunday, December 15th and 16th at Matter in Portland. Alternativity is a holiday pop-up featuring the radical prints, posters, and apparel of the Just Seeds Artist Cooperative, Eberhardt Press, The Far Woods, and Letra Chueca Press. Again, that's Alternativity, Saturday and Sunday, December 15th and 16th, from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. at Matter, 811 East Burnside in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.